wrap your arms closely, and it's sort of rocking, just rocking, you know, because there's so many people around there, you just can't move around. So that was a style that was transmitted.
It's something that evolved out of the condition,
yes. So, you know, when you think of these experiences, something you can write a book about,
yeah. Maybe you will someday.
No, I don't think so. But a lot of rich experiences. So your folks, we had gone through the same experiences when I'm conveying.
It's kind of off the subject, for that. But I was wondering, what was your transition between the YMCA and the Puerto
Rico? I noticed in the YMCA, they were catering to the middle class and upper middle class boys. Boys who had everything. And the philosophy of the Boys Club of America is we try to gear to all boys, regardless of the economic structure, whether they're rich or poor. We invite them to participate in activities. Fortunately, Pasadena were very community-minded in that they want to see that all boys have an opportunity of coming to a place which is just as good as a Y or even better as far as the facilities. And so the philosophy of this I liked. I dealt with different kinds of boys, all kinds of boys, but then when I realized that there are boys in a community who can't afford a YMCA kind of a membership. Now, the Y membership is, I guess, about between $17 to $22 a year for a boy. Whereas the Boys Club membership is $2.50 per year. That the poorest of boys, parents could afford to have them come. And the reason why it's possible in Pasadena is that there was an executive director before me many years ago who had the foresight to touch the lives of these rich people in Pasadena, sort of an endowment kind of a situation where when you pass on, there should be some kind of memorial for you. So to leave a little, you know, in your will, something for the Boys Club. And through the years, 1938 and on, he had cultivated all these contacts with people. And that's another thing. This executive was so good with people. If he was in business for it, he would have been a millionaire. But he was sold on this kind of a thing. And he left a legacy in a way. When these old people start dying off, and then their attorney would phone up and say, hey, we have a $50,000 to $75,000 will given to the Boys Club. And this has built up so that we have over, I think, $1.5 million, nearly $2 million in endowment.
Is that right?
Endowment. So that the operating fund, you see, interest alone would take care of it. And then we get 30% support from the United Way so that I can pay my staff an adequate salary so they would be comfortable. You have to have a place in our society. So it's this kind of a, so I was very fortunate in the financial structure which was built like this. he knew, now this executive knew that I was with the Y. See, I majored in physical education and minored in sociology. So he asked me if I would consider coming from the Y to the Boys Club philosophy. And he explained the situation, and then when I saw the situation, I accepted. So that was my transition from the Y work into Boys Club. Which Y were you?
I worked with Southwest Y and the Crenshaw Y.
That is interesting. Do you think that had something to do with having grown up understanding?
Now that could be part of it, you know, because I felt a little sensitive to the needs of the down and outers. Having the opportunity. And this is another area too, you know, being Nihonjin in an all-white community, very conservative Republican kind of, to even think in terms of an Asian taking over a club.
Yeah, that's really quite an unusual thing.
So I often wonder. Competition for the job, you know, because fortunately I came from the ground floor as the director, and then I advanced to the director. Every phase of this arts and crafts, you know, in the phys ed, games and social recreation, and then as a program director. So when the directors would open up, the board should apply. And then being a Japanese, you know, your first reaction is, Asian, I don't have a chance to be even considered. But when you stand before a board and they ask a question like, you know, what is it that made you want to go into youth work? So there aren't too many Asians that's this kind of work, lost in the teaching free education, not too many in the recreation and social work. So this is what I told, like I mentioned here, in my background as a young boy, real close affinity with the boys. You're at home. And then my relationship staff, comfortable feeling, because you have respect for one another. So out of all this, why the final analysis, why they chose me to take over the club, was appropriate.
So you were the best chosen for the job.
So, well, thank you.
David, my son comes here.
Family background, your training as, you know, going through your boyhood time. And as I say, leadership is a key to success. You know, you may have the best equipment and everything, but if the person running it is not in tune with the boys and staff, you'll fail. And a lot of the other clubs had fallen down because of the lack of leadership. And this is what we stress to all the staff members, you know, that you're the keys. Is if you weren't applying yourself, then the whole structure would crumble. So, we have a real warm relationship with the staff. individual, I'm looking for the youth. But it's not like criminal island.
No,
I can always turn back to my younger days.
I guess those days of that kind of community, it just doesn't exist anymore if you're not escaped, huh?
Not in the United States. And I was thinking, gee, if the, you know, you have a nostalgia, you know, when you grow up, you want to go back to your own hometown and visualize that Term Island with all the rows upon rows of barrack-type homes. And that was home. And many times when I pass through that place, I think of the great time that I used to have in Term Island.
Yeah. Where were your barrack homes? I mean, what's there now?
There's, of course, the cannery expanded so much. You know, they took just about all the homes that used to be there. Then the American Canning Company came in, you know, did all those cans and so on. That took quite a bit of it. So it's hard to visualize where things were now. The one place that I realized the landmark was the old Baptist mission compound in Term Island. And I went into that place and it was a chemist, you know, there's this more like a laboratory there. And I introduced myself as a former Term Island, and I would like to look through this building, which used to be a church. And he was delighted, by all means, come in, you know. And then there was the same old patio plaza, and then the baptistry and the room. But that's been all converted into tables with test tubes and everything like that. And going all along the building, I explained to this man, you know, where all these things were. And he says, you know, I knew this was a church that's been converted. And I said, I have lots of wonderful memories of this place. And then I started asking where the rest of the areas, you know, kind of hard to visualize with all the buildings on top of where our homes were. So he pointed out a lot of the places to get my bearing. You know, I used to live in Cannery Street on the other side. There was a Tuna Street, I guess it's still Tuna Street there. Where did your folks live?
We have some maps, historical maps.
And
we have to keep notes, so we know where Albacore Street or Canary Street or Tuna Street.
I think where's the mission? Where's the mission
from that? From Tuna Street, on the left side of that was the church. It's called the, is it the Van Camp Laboratory now? Do you know where the American Can Company is? Well, right next to that is a flat-looking stucco building that used to be the church.
Well, we're going to let you go, huh?
Not at all. But the thing is, if you would like, one of these times, when I contact these people, why, I'll be more than happy to arrange a meeting with them. They could give you some more detail to think about Term Island.
This is very helpful.
Okay. I'm going to let you guys get back to